The holidays. I'm Tom Clark, co-host of Zorba Pastor on Your Health, a weekly health and lifestyle program with Public Radio's favorite family doc, Zorba Pastor. In addition to co-hosting his public radio program for over 10 years now, Zorba is an author, university professor, practicing family physician, and medical commentator for CBS News in Madison, Wisconsin. My job is to give you our phone number so you can join in the fun. Call now at 1-800-462-7413. Or you can email us at zorba@wpr.org. We'll both be here through the hour in our radio kitchen to share with you some terrific holiday recipes.
And we have some dynamite recipes. The recipe for our appetizer is a listener recipe, Charlotte's Stuffed Mushrooms. It is so delicious. It is scrumptious. It even makes my mouth water to think about it.
What else?
And then we have an entree, pork tenderloin with demi-glaze. We'll talk about how to make an entree that you're going to want to bring to a wonderful holiday buffet, something that is tasty and delicious. And then for dessert, we have apple bread pudding. Oh, it is just absolutely delicious. So these three recipes, with those sort of in your back pocket, you can go to any buffet at any time and surprise your guests.
All heart healthy.
Yes, they're all heart healthy. Well, it depends on how much you eat, but if you eat the right amount, you control your portions, you have a delicious meal, yes, they're all heart healthy.
Well, it is the holidays, eating the right amount may be a little more difficult than usual. In addition to all the wonderful recipes, we'll share down-to-earth advice, some great lifestyle tips to help you get the most out of this holiday season.
And one of those tips is, how do you approach a holiday buffet without gaining the 4 pounds that many of us gain between November and December?
Like I was just talking about.
Yeah, exactly. It's a problem. Then what about holiday stress? You know, sort of the dark side of holidays are the fact that we often have stressors that we have to deal with. But we're going to talk about other things that are really positive. What do you do if you're going to have a party? You have people who come to the party. They don't want to drink. What are some things that you can serve them? Something called mocktails. Not a cocktail, because it doesn't have alcohol in it, but a mocktail. And then I've got some dynamite great holiday gift ideas.
Ooh, lots of great reasons to stay tuned here. And of course, we'll be sprinkling in your calls along the way at 1-800-462-7413. Well, Zorba, let's kick off the program now with a caller in Spokane, Washington. Hi.
Hello.
How can we help?
I have a holiday-related question. I like to make homemade eggnog. And recently I was at the grocery store and talking to the guy in the dairy about it. And he said he used to do that all the time when he was a kid, but now the idea of eating raw eggs and getting food poisoning kind of keeps him from doing it. And I'd never even thought about food poisoning from eggnog. How much of a potential is that?
Well, the issue with food poisoning from eggnog is salmonella. That's the issue. It has to do with the eggs. It's not the other stuff that goes in there. The milk is pasteurized, which is why we pasteurize it, so we don't get food poisoning. You know, it hits up to 161 degrees for 15 seconds. That was Pasteur's great achievement. He stopped tuberculosis, listeria, and a whole bunch of other. That was a major issue of food poisoning. You could get TB as a child in your spine from milk, from tubercular cows. I mean, it was a major issue. I mean, that was the biggest form of food poisoning. Nothing compares today to what used to occur. But the issue with salmonella is there. So who should eat eggnog? Well, it's people who are really at risk for salmonella poisoning, and those are the very old, the very young, people who have HIV/AIDS, or people with autoimmune diseases. What about the rest of us? What's our risk? Have you ever had sushi?
Yeah.
Do you like it?
No.
No, you don't.
Well,
I like
it. Okay, I don't like sushi with fish in it.
Okay, but you can have sushi with veggies. You can have veggie sushi.
Oh, okay.
Obviously, Tom is not a sushi eater if he's never had veggie sushi.
Raw veggies are fine.
Yeah. Well, but you've had sushi. Sushi carries a risk with it. It has a risk of hepatitis because it's raw fish. That's it. Have you ever had a rare hamburger on a barbecue?
No.
It's kind of red on the inside. Well, some people like them. My wife likes rare hamburgers. She runs a risk of E. coli. There's a risk with rare meat. So we have certain risks in our society. Another question. You ever go out and it's really raining and it's pouring and you don't pull your car over to the side of the road and you can barely see, but you drive on anyway? Right. You run a risk.
Sure.
This is a small risk. It's good. There. So if you like it, enjoy it. And if you get a little diarrhea, your body will take care of it. You don't. For most salmonella, you don't need treatment at all. Yeah. Your body will take care of it. But don't give it to your 90-year-old grandmother or an infant child. Yeah. And you don't give it to somebody with HIV, AIDS, or an autoimmune disease who's on prednisone.
Now, do you use bourbon or brandy in your eggnog?
This is non-alcoholic eggnog.
Oh.
Yes.
Wow, non-alcoholic eggnog.
Yes. Hmm,
well, that's unique in Wisconsin. We don't have non-alcoholic eggnog.
Well, she's not in Wisconsin.
That's true. Enjoy your eggnog.
Thank you.
And thanks for the call from Washington. We appreciate it. 800-462-7413 is our toll-free number.
You know, she brings up a good point. When you have a holiday party, when I have a holiday party or I go to a holiday party, obviously you have people there who can enjoy alcohol and, frankly, people who can't enjoy alcohol.
You give the holiday party, and I go to the holiday party.
That's absolutely true. That's absolutely
that's
true.
The kind of, that's a good
true.
Plan.
That's true. And when
we
it's my,
stick with it.
And when it's my holiday, and it's a good plan, when it's my holiday, I sort of know who to offer drinks and who not to offer drinks. But over the years, I've sort of developed a, well, I don't know if you would call it a sixth sense, but you have to be able to offer people fun things to drink so they don't feel uncomfortable because they're not alcoholic.
Something that maybe isn't a soft drink. Because soft drinks
yeah,
are
you
so
know,
bad.
You know, that's the problem. Here it is. You know, you can have a margarita over here, and over here you're going to have a, you know, another type of a drink, and here we've got some, maybe some whiskey over there for somebody who wants it, and some beer, and by the way, do you want a soft drink? Well, to me, that is not a welcoming thing.
It's not very holiday-ish either.
No, it's not very holiday-ish. So I have a list of mocktails.
Non-alcoholic cocktails.
Cocktails, that's right. Hey, mocktails. Great. Now, we know, of course, there are the traditional mocktails, if you will, the Shirley Temple. The Shirley Temple is ginger ale, grenadine syrup, and orange juice. Or we have the other traditional one, the Virgin Mary, you know, which is a Bloody Mary without the vodka. But there's a whole list of mocktails that are going to be on my website, zorbapastor.org, which are fabulous, fabulous drinks. The Arnold Palmer, that has iced tea and lemonade, the Arnold Palmer.
The Arnold Palmer?
Yeah, the Arnold Palmer. The egg cream, chocolate syrup, milk, and seltzer. So you make this, you know, you make this, if you will, live for the person when they're actually there. The Henry, which is orange juice and lemonade. We've got the Virgin Caesar, which is a Bloody Caesar without the vodka. The Virgin Pina Colada. I know that that is something you've always wanted, Tom, because I know how many pina coladas you eat.
I'm not a big pina colada guy.
Actually, my wife loves pina coladas, so she really loves this particular recipe. And, of course, we have the Virgin Margarita. And I happen to have a big party over the summer. The 4th of July, we have 25 of our favorite guests at the party. There are two people at that party who cannot drink, and I make a pitcher of margaritas, and I make a pitcher of Virgin Margaritas, and everybody's sitting by the side of my pool drinking, and you can't tell who is drinking the margaritas with the alcohol and who's drinking the margaritas without the
alcohol.
I have
a question.
Yeah.
Who is the Henry named after?
Henry who? On the list. Well, we'll just leave that up. It's not named after O. Henry, the author. That much I can tell you.
So you have a whole list. These and some others, too.
Absolutely. Come to the website, zorbapastor.org. You can download the recipes. You can use them at the holiday party. My recommendation is pick two or three and have them there along with the punch that you may have that may be alcoholic or non-alcoholic, the soft drinks, of course, and then the hard stuff or the beer or the wine for people who want that.
Okay, we've had the mocktail. It's time for the appetizer. Let's welcome in New York City caller Charlotte Sigmund. Welcome her into our radio kitchen via the phone to share her appetizer recipe for Charlotte's stuffed mushrooms. Charlotte, hi.
Hello.
Thank you. Thank you so much for submitting this.
Now, this one is for Charlotte's stuffed mushrooms. That's what we're calling it. You have another name for this recipe, though.
Yeah, it's the... You mean I have to bring something? Stuffed mushrooms.
So you like to add stuff.
We've all been in this situation.
You like to add stuff and you like other people to bring it along, huh?
Yeah, that's it.
I love it. You mean I have to bring something? Stuffed mushrooms.
How did you come up with this recipe?
I was invited to a party.
Okay.
And about an hour before I was due to be at the party, I found out that everyone was bringing a dish.
Oh, goodness, you said.
Besides, you know, the normal guest gift.
Yes.
Had to bring a dish.
Yes, right.
And I, small panic.
Small panic.
I had a cookbook and ingredients, uh-huh. not all the ingredients mm-hmm. that were in the cookbook.
Sure, sure.
In the recipe, and mm-hmm. just... It's evolved over the years.
Well, it's wonderful. It looks like it's evolved very, very well. I love the recipe, and I can just see that. So this is the stuff you had. You had to do it and take it out of your refrigerator. I would have most of this. I might not have the mushrooms, although I tend to have mushrooms in the refrigerator. Don't you, Tom?
Oh, yeah,
don't
right.
you, Tom? Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Yeah, Tom, what do you have in your refrigerator? Well, we won't even discuss that.
Yeah, let's
that
not well. Talk about that.
Anyway, he has liquid nourishment, and then he has milk and other things with that, too. But
we'll talk about the recipe, Charlotte, and feel free to jump in when we mention the ingredients with whatever you'd like, okay?
Uh-huh. Sure.
Okay, so these are Charlotte's stuffed mushrooms.
Right.
We have named them after Charlotte, Charlotte's stuffed mushrooms. Start out with one package of white mushrooms, small ones.
A package of small white mushrooms.
Now, why do you use small ones versus big ones? You find they're just easier to use, or?
Well, I make them hors d'oeuvre style.
Oh, I like that.
So it's easier for people to handle.
Yeah, it is. You know, and I must tell you, I have occasionally gone to places where I have a big mushroom, and when I bite into it and I don't pop into my mouth, sometimes it tends to dribble. I don't know what it is, but the cap tends to hold things. No, it is. I find it, I like a smaller mushroom.
Right. Now, if you wanted to make this as a meal, you could use the big mushrooms
absolutely.
And knife and fork.
Absolutely, that would be great. One small onion. Use a white onion or a regular onion?
A regular onion. I tend to use a Vidalia.
Oh, Vidalia.
Sweeter onion.
I love Vidalia onions. I love Vidalia onions. They would be good. And red onions might be good in this, too. They might look a little red.
Mm-hmm.
Two stalks of celery. Chopped, is that what you do? Chop the celery?
Chop everything fine.
Everything chopped. Mm-hmm. Clove of garlic.
Mm-hmm.
Eat your garlic. This would be a great place to get garlic. I love garlic. I love garlic. 2 tablespoonfuls of olive oil. Use extra virgin or pure olive oil. What do you use?
I use extra virgin.
I do, too.
Because that's what I tend to keep in the house.
I do, too. And I order mine now over the web. I looked up a couple of extra virgin olive oils that actually had won some prizes and that weren't too pricey, you know, because you can buy them for lots and lots of money, and I've discovered that you can buy some really good olive oil on the web, and then that's, to me, that's often cheaper than in the store. Third of a cup of Italian breadcrumbs.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, low sodium. Half cup of cooked crab, optional. So do you use the artificial crab, or do you take crab out of the can? Or?
Well, I've used both.
Mm-hmm.
I tend to like the crab out of the can better.
Yeah, they're
for the simple
good.
Reason it flakes up very fine.
It does flake up fine.
Why do you list it as optional instead of one of the ingredients here?
Well, because if you don't like crab and you don't like shrimp,
yeah, that's true.
You don't
that's
have
true.
To have it.
That's true.
My family doesn't particularly care for it.
Yeah, and if you're keeping kosher, for instance, you can't eat shellfish, so the people can't have it for dietary reasons. If you're vegetarian, you're not going to have this. This is a good vegan recipe up until this point. And you mentioned the next thing, which is a quarter cup Romano cheese.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so if you're a vegan, you can't have cheese. And if you're a vegetarian, you can have cheese, but you're not going to have crab.
Right.
So you like Romano cheese, huh? Could you use Parmesan in this, too, I bet?
Any of the hard cheeses,
any
I think you could
cheeses.
Use.
Be good. Now, what's this wine or beer to taste? It means you taste it as you're making it? Is that what you do? You have a taste of beer and make the mushrooms? What does that mean?
It's more of a splash.
More of a splash.
To give it a little bit of a bite.
Splash. What kind of wine?
I have used.
Yeah.
I've used cooking sherry, which is what that original recipe called for.
Yeah.
I've used whites. I use whatever is in my refrigerator.
Whatever's in your cabinet. Let me tell you, the wine I always have vermouth on hand, and vermouth to me is the white wine of choice when you're looking for wine. It's cheap, it's inexpensive. Cook's Illustrated, my favorite Down Out cookbook website, talked about what they use as sort of a something to stock around in Cook's Illustrated, and the cheaper one, which was the Gallo brand, was actually better than the pricey one that cost 3 times as much. So that's what I would put in here.
And then
some pepper. Yeah, vermouth. Great white wine to use. Never gets old.
I will say the Guinness Stout works very well.
Wow, Guinness Stout. Now I've got a question. So you take a splash of Guinness Stout. What do you do with the rest of the Guinness?
that's for the cook.
Yeah, that's for the cook.
Tasting perfect.
There we've got it. So preheat the oven at 350 degrees. Brush the mushrooms and the mushroom cap. Reserve the stems. Set the caps aside for later use. Rinse and dice the mushroom stems. Chop enough onion to equal the amount of stems. So that's how you decide. Finely chopped, I guess. I might use my little tiny little Cuisinart. I don't use my big Cuisinart, but I've got a little kind of portable one to use for these.
That's what I use also.
Those, that little small one, I don't know what you call them, but they're the small ones. The big one is way too big, but the small ones would be great for something like this to chop it up. Mm-hmm. Tom knows what I'm talking about. You know, those small little Cuisinart-y things.
Oh, sure, of course.
I'm sure, of course, it does. Repeat for the celery stalks and the breadcrumbs. Chop the garlic. You can shove everything in that little thing and go whirl, and you're done. Mm-hmm. And I love shortcuts. And in a skillet, heat the olive oil. Give it a few turns with some fresh pepper on there. Then add the mushroom stems, onion, garlic, and celery. Saute until tender. Do not fry. You mean keep it a little crunchy, or you mean what? How long do you usually cook this for?
Don't brown it. What you really want to do is sauté. You just want to get the vegetables tender.
Okay, so you want to sauté low, medium, or high heat?
Medium.
Medium, okay.
So
medium
you can control
heat.
It.
So it is a sauté. It is not a brown. You've got a gas stove or an electric stove?
I have an electric stove.
Electric stove.
So, I do a lot of lifting.
So you do a lot of No, you do, because it's not as responsive. With gas, I turn it down right away and I'm out of there.
Right.
You know, but with electric, you've got to move it over. So it's a flip of the wrist. Okay, add the breadcrumbs. Very important, add the breadcrumbs afterwards, and that's to soak up all that stuff that's in there, right? And you don't want to cook the breadcrumbs. Turn off the heat and cover. Don't remove from the burner. Let it sit for 5 minutes so the stems soften and the breadcrumbs do that. Then you take the mushroom cap, spoon the stuffing, place it in a glass cooking dish. Now, can you make this, do you bake it right away, or can you make this all and put it in the refrigerator and bake it the next day?
I've done it the night before with no problem because there's nothing in there. Everything is cooked.
I like that.
So I feel that there's nothing that could be bad.
To me, I like that. And I'll tell you what I've been doing. I happen to like to entertain a lot, and we've been having people over at the house, and I like trying to do things the night before, so when they come over, I have more time to spend with them. And I like to do some things in the kitchen, because the kitchen is the center of our house. People are around the kitchen, and we like to chop and do things. But I don't like to do too much in the kitchen. So what I can prepare the night before, I love. So I think that's what I would do. And then you bake it for like 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Brown it. Hi, and the oven's 350, so you put it in the middle of the oven. Is that what you do?
Yeah, in the middle of the oven. It's just until the mushrooms look done.
So they look done. So it's uncovered, so they look done, so they'll, which is about right, because you've got plenty of liquid here. So looks like a great, and it's wonderful. We look at it, it's a per serving, it's 40 calories, that's nothing. A glass of V8 is 80 calories. I think a V8 is hardly any calories, and that's what I'm now using to compare things. So it's like 4 ounces of tomato juice, basically. And to me, that's nothing at all. We look at the fat. There's a little bit of fat, and that comes from the olive oil. Olive oil is, of course, good fat versus bad fat. Good example, 2 grams of fat, 1/12 of that is saturated fat. So there's hardly any saturated fat in it at all. Dynamite recipe. I love it. So thank you for sharing this with us.
I'm glad you enjoyed it.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you very much for sharing that.
So bye-bye.
It's a wonderful recipe. And if you want to come to our website, ZorbaPastor.org. That's Zorba Pastor, P-A-S-T-E-R. We'll have all of today's recipes there for you to look at.
You'll want to stick around. We have more food coming up, our main course meal. We have dessert, more of your calls too, some medical research, a holiday medical myth buster, and Zorba's gift list. All right here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health in the kitchen for the holidays. From PRI, Public Radio International. Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health in the kitchen for the holidays. Zorba, it will be recipe time, but before that, you're going to help us out with holiday stress, something many of us feel each holiday season.
Right. You look at some recent surveys that came out of the National Institute of Mental Health. We find that holiday stress is a big problem. And so what we ought to do is look at the top stressors in the holiday and holiday time and figure out really how to address them.
Let's do it.
The number one stressor is money.
I was going to say relatives.
Your number one stressor is relatives.
I shouldn't have said that. One of my relatives is a listener.
That's it. That's it. Your number one stressor is relatives.
All right,
but
money.
The number
money.
One stressor actually is money. And the reason is, and the number one people, by the way, if you look at a group of people who are the most likely to be stressed, they're parents. And so you think about it. Parents often it's parents who have young children because they're watching TV or movies and they're thinking that they have to buy their children everything and they don't have enough money or there's debt overhang. But that's the number one stressor that we have during the holidays is money. And I have an antidote.
Get a job.
Antidote, get a job. Get a job. Wasn't that a song at one time? No, that is not my antidote.
What's
get a
the
job.
Antidote?
The antidote actually is to spend less money. That ultimately is it. You know, what happens is the advertisements want us to spend more money. They want us to go out and use our Visa card and our MasterCard and everything else. And the answer is look at what you can give as a gift and consider how you can cut that down if you're having financial stress.
You're not going to want me to start doing craft stuff.
No. Crafts? No, I don't think that connects together. I do not want you to do crafts. But once again, you're looking at two things in a store. Let's say you're looking at books, and one book costs $25, and one book costs $8. Mm-hmm. You can buy the $8 or the $10 book, and then you can put in a personal card. I think one of the most important things about the holidays is to personalize them, and you take a card, and you buy 10 cards or 12 cards or 20 cards, and you write two or three sentences to the person that you're giving a gift about how much they mean to you.
Yeah, great idea.
That's much more meaningful,
great idea.
And it costs less money.
Nobody gets a letter anymore. And this
nobody
would be
gets
very
a letter.
Nice
and believe me, you know and I know, email does not count the same.
Right.
It's not
right.
The same thing. And a personal letter written in your handwriting makes a big gift. So that's how we take care of the money thing. The second stressor happens to be what most Americans think about are those people who are no longer with us during the holiday seasons. You think about your aunt. I think about my mom who hasn't been with me for more than 25 years. I think about my Aunt Myrtle for me because we always had holidays at her house. How do you deal with that? What's the antidote for that?
Wow.
Well, that's exactly it. The antidote for that is wow. It's thinking about the person. It's thinking about their memory. It's just like grieving. It's paying homage and respect to them.
And remembering the good times.
Yeah. In other words, it's really not a bad thing to think about those people who passed away. It's really a good thing to think about them and think about them in a positive way. And if you have children or grandchildren or you have friends or relatives, talk about the loved one who isn't there. So every time around Christmas, I always talk to my kids about my Aunt Myrtle and how she had a Christmas omelet. And what we always did around the Christmas during the holiday times is we always made a certain egg omelet. And I make that once a year during that time. And that's what I do. Yeah. That's what I do for
what
my
else?
Loved one. The third thing that people have is they're stressed about the fact that there's too much on their plate. Mm-hmm. There's too much to do. There are too many parties to go to. There are too many kids' parties or adult parties or relative parties. So, you know, they're just stressed about all of the things that they have to do around their lives. So you know what the antidote is to that?
Cut back, I would guess.
Hey, baby, you've got it. That's always the way you handle things. If you cut back and you do less, so what you do, my recommend is prioritize. Mm-hmm. Take a list, write down the things you have to do maybe this week or this month, decide what things are most important, circle them in red, and decide those things that are not as important, and decide what you are going to jettison, what you're going to get rid of. That's the way to look at the stresses during holiday seasons.
Another stress reducer might be pork tenderloin with demi-glace.
That is delicious. That is our recipe of the week.
No stress associated
Absolutely.
With that.
You know, we had the wonderful appetizer, Charlotte's stuffed mushrooms, and now we've got pork tenderloin with demi-glace. Wonderful, wonderful recipe. One of the things that I like to do at holiday parties, potluck holiday parties, which happen to be my favorite, is how can I bring a dish to the party that nobody else has tasted, that'll be delicious, that'll be wonderful, that people may talk about after the party, that I can give away a recipe to. And I think the pork tenderloin with demi-glaze is sort of a great recipe.
Okay, well, let's put it together.
We are. You start out with 2 pounds of pork tenderloin. Now, I want to explain, this is sort of a variation on a beef tenderloin recipe, sort of a Chateaubriand for two. I use pork tenderloin for a couple of reasons. First of all, it is a red meat. The pork people would like us to believe that it's
the other white
meat, but it's not. It's red meat. But of course, this is the holiday season, and I think it's a time to utilize that. Pork tenderloin is inexpensive compared to beef tenderloin. It's a very low-fat product, so you often have to add a little bit of fat or oil. You have to cook it the right way, mm-hmm. or it will be dry and tasteless.
But cooked right, pork tastes really, really,
absolutely.
Really good.
Absolutely, and that's where the demi-glaze comes in. The demi-glaze is a way of adding a delicious moisture to the pork tenderloin itself. It's a very, very good way, essentially, of having a delicious, delicious dish to pass. So start out with 2 pounds of pork tenderloin.
2 pounds of pork tenderloin.
That's right. Then we're going to go with 2 slices of turkey bacon.
2 slices of turkey bacon.
That's right. 2/3 of a cup of dry red wine.
2/3 of a cup of dry red wine.
Now, when you use red wine, what wine do you use in your cooking, Tom?
Well, I know what you use. As cheap a wine as you
can exactly, get. That's exactly what I do. What I do is I go for a cheap wine. I do not do a sweet wine like Mogan David. This is not where you would use Mogan David. It's got to be. That's very sweet. You want a dry red wine. Inexpensive is good. Actually, port would be okay in something like this, but generally I go for an inexpensive red. Inexpensive red table wine will be fine. 1.5 teaspoons of fresh rosemary leaves minced.
1.5 little tea. Fresh rosemary leaves mint.
Now, you may have to shop in the right store to be able to find that, because a lot of stores, of course,
you
have dry.
You mean one may
that's
have
right,
to.
That's right. That's right. You are not the shopper in your family. But the minced rosemary has a wonderful smell to it that dried rosemary simply does not have. So you want fresh rosemary leaves that are minced.
Okay.
And you could use basil, by the way, if you don't have rosemary, but rosemary is far better. Mm-hmm. 1 red bell pepper sliced.
A sliced red bell pepper.
1.5 cups of sliced mushrooms.
1.5 cups sliced mushrooms.
Do not use canned. They will not taste the same thing. They have to be fresh mushrooms. You could also use, for variation, portobello mushrooms. You could use shiitake mushrooms, or you could use the regular button mushrooms. 1 cup of dried cranberries.
Oh, interesting. A cup of dried cranberries.
That's right. They're called craisins. They're just like raisins, but they're essentially dried cranberries. They are delicious. They add a wonderful taste to it. You could use golden raisins. If you don't like the taste of cranberries, the cranberries are the way to go. It's holiday time. It's cranberry time. And by the way, you know the number one state for cranberry production in the country?
Wisconsin.
There you go. Yeah. Absolutely. And then 1.3 cups of demi-glaze.
1.3 cups of demi-glaze. Where do you get that?
That's right. You can get that at a specialty store. Sometimes it's called veal demi-glaze. It's not made with veal at all. It essentially is a prepared item, and you can make it yourself if you want to. Mm-hmm. So here's how we do it.
Okay.
Pat the pork tenderloin dry. Very important to make it as dry as you can with paper towels. Then throw the paper towels away, obviously. Mm-hmm. Season it with kosher salt and freshly ground black pepper. Kosher salt or sea salt tastes much better, especially when you're seasoning anything that happens to be a meat or a chicken product. Then cut the turkey bacon into 1.5-inch pieces in a heavy skillet or a Dutch oven, a little larger than the tenderloin. Cook the bacon over moderate heat until it's crisp. Then transfer the bacon with a slotted spoon to a bowl. Then increase the heat moderately high and brown the tenderloin on all sides. That's about 5 minutes. Now, it's really important that that be moderately high, a little bit below smoking, because what you want to do when you are essentially browning the meat is you're sealing in the juices. Remember, tenderloin does not have a lot of fat, and so you've got to seal it in, or this will be a dry product. Transfer the tenderloin to a plate. Now, add wine, cooked bacon, rosemary to the kettle, and boil for 1 minute. Then return the tenderloin to the kettle and cover and simmer on extremely low heat. Not high heat, low heat, for about 25 minutes, turning occasionally. That's how you're cooking it. You're sealing it in initially and then cooking it, if you will, in this wonderful, wonderful sauce. Then transfer the tenderloin to a cutting board and let it stand for 10 minutes, and that is crucial. If you don't let it stand, you don't let the juices go back into the tenderloin. Now, remove the bacon from the remaining sauce. Add the red pepper, the mushrooms, the dried cranberries, and the demi-glaze to the kettle. Boil the sauce over moderate heat until it is slightly thickened. And now, you cut the tenderloin into wonderful thin slices. Arrange on a platter. Spoon the sauce over the tenderloin. Garnish, if you will, with maybe some rosemary sprigs or maybe some parsley. And bon appetit. Mm. It is a delicious,
delicious,
wonderful
dish.
Serve
maybe with some baby potatoes and some good veggies. I would guess we have a couple of pounds of pork here. Maybe 6 or 8 people could be
absolutely served. 6 or 8 people. And what we get from this, it's roughly 500 calories a serving if you serve it to 8 people. In other words, everyone would get a quarter of a pound with a serving. When we look at fat, the fat content has some saturated fat, but it still is a heart-healthy recipe. It has some cholesterol in it, of course, but it is loaded with protein. One serving is 70% of the protein that you need for the entire
day. We think about holiday food. We think about turkey. We think about ham. This is a nice alternative.
Absolutely. Nice, the thing that I like about the holidays is, why not use a little variation? You never think about pork tenderloin and associate that with the holidays. This is a dynamite recipe.
We're happy to give this recipe to you via your computer.
All you have to do is go to our website, zorbapastor.org, and you can pull down this recipe and all the other recipes on today's show.
800-462-7413, the toll-free number if you'd like to talk with Zorba, as we welcome in our next caller who's in Boise, Idaho. Hi.
Hi. Hi, guys. Thanks
How are
for
you?
Taking my call.
It is our pleasure to take your call.
What's
I
up?
I am calling with the perfect question for
holiday the perfect
baking.
Question.
Oh,
the
we've been waiting
question.
For that for years.
The perfect question.
I'm calling about the 3 scariest words known to dieters everywhere.
Okay.
Trans fats, saturated fats, and hydrogenated oils.
Oh, okay. The 3 scariest words. Trans fats, saturated fats, and hydrogenated oils.
Well, I don't
oils.
Think those are the 3 scariest
Tom's
words.
Tom's not scared. I don't see any fright on his face. Of course, he's not a dieter.
Put up your hands, to me, are the scariest words. Or hold up your hands,
put
and,
up
give
your
me,
hands.
And give me your wallet.
Give me your money. Those
yeah, yeah. A little scarier than trans fats. But anyway, go ahead.
But this is for dieters.
Right, right.
So, my question is, I am lucky enough to be a stay-at-home mom of 3 little kids under 5.
Oh, how wonderful. How
I bake frequently
wonderful.
For them. I bake about once a week.
How wonderful.
I usually I make a batch of cookies or I roll out a pie crust. And my question
I'm coming over tonight. I want a little pie. I love pie.
I wonder if I should be using butter. Margarine or shortening?
Well, that's you bring up the big question. First of all, we are now trying to get rid of trans fats. It's so interesting. Health and medicine, here it is. We said margarine is always the way to go, and then we discover that brick margarine has trans fats, and then we discover that trans fats and brick margarine are basically the same as eating butter. Doesn't make any difference. It's probably not any worse, and it's probably not any better. Now, if you want to rid yourself of trans fats, what you want to do is go to a soft margarine. And there are soft margarines that say no trans fats. Oils on the whole do not have trans fats in them at all, by the way. Once you hydrogenate it and you make it more firm, that's when you produce the trans fats. So when you can use oil, you want to use it. When you can use tub margarine, you want to use it. But when you want to go for the gold, you want to use butter. You know, so the reality is, if I'm going to have a piece of something that I really like a kolachki, which is sort of this Polish pastry that I don't make, but I like to eat. I want to have it with butter, and I don't see anything wrong with that. The problem in America is, it's not that we're eating too much butter, it's that we're eating too much, and everything is part of too much, and oils are part of it. So the answer is, use what you want to, but limit what you're eating.
Moderation.
That's what I really think is there. And when you choose a margarine, choose a tub margarine because it doesn't have the trans fats. In other words, cut out the trans fats. And if you're going to butter your bread, you may want to use a tub margarine. What I do when I have an English muffin, which I love in the morning, I have butter. And I've started buying more butter again. And I buy unsalted butter because I like it. And I use it on my English muffin. And then I try to avoid fats during the day for other things. I mean, you know, we got to kind of use our brain, have to enjoy our food. All this. Sometimes we're too nuts about it.
When
food.
I throw a sandwich together, I use tub margarine.
On a sandwich.
On a sandwich.
Wait a second. What do you use tub margarine on a sandwich for? You mean before you put the bologna on your sandwich?
Yeah.
You butter your bread before you put bologna or sausage on your sandwich?
I don't do bologna. I do beef or I do ham and cheese.
You butter the bread?
Butter.
Oh, gosh. I would never butter the bread. Never.
You use mustard.
I use mustard. I use mustard.
What's wrong with buttering the bread? I mean, with margarine.
You don't need that oil on
margarining.
Margarining. We're Googling.
Not easy to say.
It's a verb or margarining. Let's start a trend. Margarining your bread.
But moderation is your
moderation.
Keyword.
Moderation is the key.
800-462-7413, our toll-free number. And speaking of baked goods, Zorba, let's grab a question from our inbox from Brian in St. Louis, Missouri. Brian has been a type 2 diabetic for 4 years now, and around the holidays, this limits the food he can enjoy at all his holiday functions and parties. He'd like to know your suggestions for some healthy substitutes for traditional holiday snacks.
Well, first of all, when we look at our regular snacks, they are loaded and loaded with calories. So when we look at a diabetic, one of the things you want to limit with a diabetic, and if you are a diabetic, obviously are carbohydrates. So the snack that you go to are veggie snacks. So my recommendation is find yourself things that you like to dip. Carrot sticks, broccoli, cauliflower, snow peas, and then go to wonderful websites that you can find all over the web and look for low-carbohydrate dips that you find you can enjoy. So one of my recommendations is before you go to that buffet, prepare yourself. Think about the fact that you're going to go to a buffet. There's going to be more food than anyone can possibly eat in their entire life at this buffet because their buffets are always filled with lots of delicious things. And kind of prepare yourself. What am I going to do? Just a little bit of thought beforehand and realize as a diabetic or as somebody who wants to lose weight or as somebody who doesn't want to gain weight, there's going to be some limitations. In other words, you can't have everything you want to have. So make a plan. Prepare before you go. Then when you get to the buffet, take a survey. Start at the beginning of the buffet and go to the end of the buffet and look at what's there and say, gee, I'd like to have a little bit of this. I'd like to have a little bit of that. Don't start at the beginning of the buffet and simply work your way through because what happens is quite often your plate will be filled with things before you get to that dish that you really wanted to have in the first place.
That's always a good idea in any buffet.
So don't go in order. When I go to a holiday buffet, I go to the end of the buffet and I go in reverse order because it immediately gives me a different sort of a mindset. I go from the end and I go sort of against the traffic.
The people in line certainly appreciate that.
They have some problems, but I smile and I go, excuse me and thank you and, you know, that kind of thing. So you take a survey. Then pick what you like. In other words, decide what you like and decide on at least one thing that you know you probably shouldn't have, but you really want to have because it's the holiday time. That might be a piece of chocolate cake. Now, if you're a diabetic, that means you have to look at the size of the piece of chocolate cake, but pick something that you like that you know you may limit yourself on, and don't limit yourself. Make it a time that you can really enjoy yourself, but as I said, with a bit of pre-thought, you can do a great job.
Sounds like some great advice. Lots more coming up here. You'll want to stay tuned. We've had our appetizer, we've had our main course, we have our dessert recipe coming up, we also have our holiday Mythbuster, our gift list, and lots more of your calls coming up too here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. In the kitchen for the holidays from PRI, Public Radio International. I'm Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health in the kitchen for the holidays. Zorba, you said you had a gift list for us, top 10 gift ideas.
Absolutely. You know, it's this time of year that you're thinking about what can I give to people, what's appropriate for them, and I've got 10 gifts that are absolutely dynamite. They're on our website, zorbapastor.org, and I want to tell you what I think is the one that you need first.
Oh, well, what is it?
Is a pedometer. It is a great stocking stuffer, but it's a pedometer, you know, so you can see how much you're walking or you're not walking. Now, I know you walk your dog.
Happy holidays! Here's a pedometer.
That's right. Get out there and move your body.
It's something I can afford.
Yeah, something you can afford. Yeah. But they're different pedometers. I've got a dynamite one on the website. Some of them are more complex than others. Frankly, it measures your steps. We all need 10,000 steps a day. Mm-hmm. That's roughly what the Europeans do in terms of the amount of walking they do. It's roughly what the Japanese do, and that turns out to be a way to measure it. Another great gift is a picnic basket.
A picnic basket?
Absolutely. Here it is. It's cold outside, maybe. Maybe it's, you know, the nights are long and
December.
The days are short.
Let's go on a picnic.
Let's go on a picnic. But you know what it does? It gives you hope for the future. You realize the days are going to get longer. You think about the time that you're going to spend with your, you know, with your loved one or somebody who you really like. My daughter, Vanessa, you know, the youngest of my four children, once said to me, "Daddy, there's no such thing as a bad picnic." She must have been 10 years of age when she said that.
I haven't seen a picnic basket.
They're wonderful baskets.
Years.
Wonderful baskets. You can either get wonderful wicker baskets. Again, it'll be on our website, zorbapastor.org, or you can get these wonderful backpack picnic baskets. But a picnic basket's a wonderful thing because it improves those social relationships and it encourages outdoor activity. Remember, activity is the issue.
Okay.
Then another gift would be a gym membership.
Oh.
A gym membership. Maybe a 90-day membership, maybe a one-month trial membership at a local gym that's useful. There's a new gym in our area, which is very interesting. It's called the 24-Hour Gym.
Mm-hmm.
You put a card in there, and 24 hours a day, you can go into this gym. So people who get up early in the morning can go and
exercise.
You have
to be a little careful to make sure that the person really is motivated enough to want to use it.
Well, maybe you want to get a gym membership that you can return like a gift card, right? Just like you buy in a store. If people don't like it, can they return it? But with a little bit of forethought, you can end up giving some wonderful gift ideas. But Tom, my number one gift idea,
yes.
You're going to have to wait until the end of the show to hear that.
Okay, coming up. 800-462-7413 is our toll-free number. And Zorba, a listener with us now in El Paso, Texas. Hi.
Muchachos, buenos dias. Feliz Navidad.
Very nice talking. I can understand it. My kids all speak Spanish. Feliz Navidad.
Yeah, this is true.
I got it,
all
too.
All right. Let me tell you why I'm calling, guys.
Okay.
I'm cruising down in my 76 Vet with the T-tops off, listening to Zorba Pastor on your health.
Good for you.
When suddenly, out of my right eye, which I've had a cataract in, I lose not the vision, but it becomes real blurry.
Ooh.
For a second or two, it's kind of like a split screen on a TV.
Hmm.
I blink. I think I'm having a stroke. I go to the hospital. 9.5 hours later, and a CT later, they tell me that everything's okay. They tell me to go to my regular doctor, which I do. MRI, CTs, all kinds of stuff. They can't find anything wrong. I'm wondering. I'm taking Flomax and also Avodart. I have since stopped taking the Flomax because I understand it gives you blurry vision.
Well, Flomax is a drug that is used to help with, which is used to help with an enlarged prostate. It helps you flow, is really what it does. And it can produce some dryness in the mouth. It can produce some increase, actually, in the pressure of the eye. So I think stopping the Flomax actually does seem like it's somewhat reasonable. And you're taking Avodart, which is a combination pill. It's a blood pressure pill and a pill that also lowers cholesterol. But getting back to this eye situation, how long did it last?
Approximately, I would say maybe 10, 15 seconds max.
So 10 or 15 seconds, then it went away. You take an aspirin every day, by the way?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Other medical problems that you have? Your cholesterol is elevated, your blood pressure. When was the last time you had your eyes examined?
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, my regular doctor, after all the MRIs and all that, sent me to the ophthalmologist.
Uh-huh.
And everything came out fine there. He even listened to the blood flow going through the small brain that I have, and everything was working fairly well.
No. It's the small vessels in the brain. It's not the small brain. It's that the brain has small vessels in it. So
now I can explain that to my wife.
Well, I don't know if she'll believe us. But getting back to the issue at hand, I think part of it is, obviously, you've been worked up for whether or not this is in your brain. You know, looking at the blood vessels with an MR scan and a CT scan and looking at the carotids. Did they do an ultrasound of the carotid arteries to see whether or not there was something coming up from there?
No.
That's what I would suggest. That's part of the workup. That's what I would do as the final part of the workup, because sometimes the carotids are blocked and they'll shoot out a little emboli, a little bit of cholesterol, and they'll shoot it out and you'll have this momentary, what's called this TIA, and I would check that out. You need your carotids checked out with an ultrasound of the carotids. It's called a carotid Doppler. That's what it's called. That's very important. You've had the MR scan and the CT scan shows you haven't had a stroke, but you may still be having TIAs, these transient ischemic attacks. Now, If they continue, then in addition to aspirin, you need a drug called Plavix, P-L-A-V-I-X, okay. 75 milligrams a day, and you need that. And the reason is, if the eye doctor says it's not from the eyes, doesn't sound like it's from the eyes, this sounds to me like this is a transient ischemic attack. And you don't see that on the MR or the CT, but if the Doppler is normal, in other words, you don't have cruddy carotids, and you keep on getting these, I would recommend Plavix, because I think this is a TIA. And if you need another evaluation, it is a neurologist that you want to see. That's who you want to see. That's what I think this is. So good
Excellent.
Luck. Hope your brain grows in size.
I hope so, too, because my wife has been complaining that I'm getting a little more free-brained as I go along.
And enjoy that convertible.
Thanks. I'll see you guys.
Thanks. Appreciate the call.
Take care.
Zorba, let's have a little fun with an old holiday myth now. This one for all the guys and gals who take that holiday nap right after eating a big plate of turkey. Does the turkey actually make you tired?
I think you're actually ready to fall asleep even just thinking about it. The myth is that the tryptophan, which is an amino acid in the turkey, will actually make you sleepy. And the answer is...
It will.
It does not make you sleepy.
Get out of here.
It does not make you sleepy.
For years, I have believed...
It does not make you sleepy. Well, it does not make you sleepy. It turns out tryptophan is an amino acid. It's a precursor to a chemical in our brain, which is called serotonin, which plays a major role in sleep. But there's a lot of tryptophan in chicken. Every time you eat chicken, do you get sleepy?
Well, if I eat a lot of it.
How about hamburger? Every time you eat hamburger, do you get sleepy?
I think it's the quantity.
How about milk? Yeah. Drink a glass of milk or have some cottage cheese? Well, tryptophan is all over the place.
The dairy stuff is a nice thing when I go to bed. I tend to feel a little more tired, maybe a glass of warm milk,
but most people believe the glass of warm milk is because you're warming it up and you're kind of getting ready for bed and so on. Tryptophan, consumed by itself on an empty stomach in a pill or supplement form, may indeed help you go to sleep. But when it comes to the fact that you're eating it with a whole bunch of other amino acids from the turkey that you're actually eating, it's competing with the other amino acids to cross the brain-blood barrier and help make you sleep. It turns out it doesn't have a factor. But you know why you're sleepy when you eat that turkey at Thanksgiving?
Because I eat too much of it.
That's right. Too much of the turkey. Yeah. Or you eat as much of the turkey as you want to, which turns out to be an enormous amount of turkey. And the reason why you're sleepy is you ate the turkey, and you ate the cranberries, and you ate the mashed potatoes, and you ate the stuffing and the dressing, and you ate those three pieces of cake. It's the amount of food that you eat at the time that makes you sleepy. It is not the tryptophan.
Very interesting. So, with that being resolved, let's move on to our final recipe of the day, Zorba. My favorite dessert.
Absolutely. Your favorite is always dessert. Tom, it is apple bread pudding, and it is delish.
Let's do it.
Start out with four slices of bread, firm, with no crust, cut into cubes.
This is regular old white bread?
That's right, white bread. That's
right. Okay. Four slices of bread, firm, with no crusts, cut into cubes.
But you know what? You bring up a good point. You could use whole wheat bread. You could use sourdough bread. It doesn't really make any difference what you use. Yeah. For the holidays, I tend to use white bread. For dessert, I can't think whole wheat is too healthy for you. Two teaspoons of butter.
Too little tea butter.
That's right. Not margarine, not anything with trans fats in it, purely butter. Two medium Granny Smith apples, peeled, cored, and cut into wedges. I choose Granny Smith because it has a tang to it.
Okay, two medium Granny Smith apples, peeled, cored, cut into wedges.
8 tablespoonfuls of sugar.
8 big tea sugar.
Now, if you want to cut down on the recipe and you want to use Splenda, which you can use in cooking for fewer calories, you certainly can do that. Mm-hmm. There are two kinds of people in the America today, it seems. People who say Splenda is okay and people who say Splenda is bad for you. You choose, but if you want to cut down on the calories, you certainly could use Splenda for cooking this.
Okay.
1 tablespoonful of raisins.
A big tea, regular raisins, golden?
Either golden or brown raisins, whichever you want to use.
Okay.
2 cups of 1% milk.
2 cups of milk.
2 large eggs.
2 big eggs.
1 teaspoon of vanilla extract.
A little tea vanilla extract.
1 teaspoon of ground cinnamon.
a little tea, ground cinnamon.
And make sure that you choose a good brand. And when I buy cinnamon, I do not buy it in large containers because over time I think it goes stale. Mm-hmm. A nice, new, fresh ground cinnamon will actually make it taste even better. And orange zest to garnish.
Sounds pretty.
Now, you know how to zest, right?
Yeah, you like on the peel.
That's good enough for you. Okay, here's how we make it. Preheat the oven to 350 degrees. Now, lightly butter a 9-inch in diameter glass pie dish. Then arrange the bread cubes in the dish. Melt 2 teaspoons of butter in a large nonstick skillet over medium heat. Add the apples and saute for about 5 minutes in the butter. Mm-hmm. Sprinkle now with 2 tablespoonfuls of sugar or the Splenda if you want to, and saute until the apples are golden brown. That's about 6 minutes. Then arrange the apples on top of the bread and sprinkle with raisins. Now, in a separate small saucepan, bring the milk to a boil and whisk in the eggs and the remaining sugar or Splenda in a medium bowl to blend, and then gradually whisk in the hot milk and then the vanilla and then the cinnamon, and pour this custard mixture over the bread and apple mixture and let it stand until it's almost totally absorbed. That takes about 30 minutes. So go do something else in the house. Maybe read an email or talk to your friends Decorate the tree, whatever is your passion. Yeah. Then place the pie dish in a roasting pan and add just enough water, hot water, to the roasting pan to come up halfway on the pie dish. Okay, so you've got it in the pan. The water is coming halfway up the pie dish, and then bake the bread pudding until the top is golden brown, until the custard is set. That's about 40 minutes. So it's going to be in a nice, steamy environment. Remove it from the water and serve it hot.
You can have you can have really bad bread pudding sometimes. The best bread pudding is in New Orleans. Is this going to taste as good as New Orleans?
Well, I don't guarantee it's going to taste as good as New Orleans, because New Orleans bread pudding is really, really, really good. But I think part of it is being in New Orleans and having the wonderful time that I always have whenever I've gone to New Orleans and visited a good friend of mine. But this bread pudding is dynamite and is easy to make.
And if I want to find it on the web?
You find it at our website, zorbapastor.org. This recipe will be on it along with the other recipes on today's show.
Which is almost over. Are we going to hear your number one gift idea now?
Absolutely. You know, when we look at the holidays as a time of stress and a time of joy, and we think about the ultimate gift that we can give, I think the ultimate gift is to send a child to camp. Now, that's an expensive gift. For someone who can afford it, that might be $300 or $500. But for somebody who can't afford it, calling up your local camp and sending some money to help send a child to camp can make you feel really good. And the way you do it in someone else's name is you buy a gift card and you write on that card, "I am sending a child," or "I am helping to send a child to camp in your name. And this is the gift that I'm giving you for the holidays."
Very thoughtful and a nice idea, I think. We'll see you next time, Zorba.
A pleasure to be here, Tom.
Zorba Pastor on Your Health in the Kitchen for the Holidays was a production of Wisconsin Public Radio, produced by Adam Friedrich. Brad Kohlberg is our technical director. Our show theme music was created by Ben and Leo Sidran. On behalf of the entire Zorba Pastor on Your Health crew, I'm Tom Clark, wishing you a very happy and healthy holiday season.
Support for this program comes from this station and Public Radio International stations nationwide.
Public Radio International.
The University of Illinois is a hotbed of cutting-edge research.
You can make stretchable electronics so it can form to the contours of your body and move with you like spandex. Being able to put electronics on anything such that it's more useful to the operator of the device.
University Laboratory High School students explore new technological marvels and the minds behind them in Widgets and Digits, Technological History, Research, and Invention at the University of Illinois.
This afternoon at 1 here on WILL Urbana.
Thanks for listening to AM 580. I'm Henry Frayne with a check of your Christmas Day forecast. Today mostly sunny, not as cold, highs in the lower 40s, south winds 10 to 15 miles.